The U.S. should not be in a lagging position. We should be in a global leading position.
Trade is alive and well in Asia. It's Monday, November 16th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, President-elect Biden expected to change Asia approach. Trump and supporters rally against election results. Dogs sniff out COVID. Crazy, dangerous weather. Laughter to cope with it all. It's all on today's VOA Asia. 15 Asia-Pacific economies have agreed to form the world's largest free trade bloc, a China-backed deal that excludes the United States, which had left a rival Asia-Pacific grouping under President Donald Trump. The signing of the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or RCEP, at a regional summit in Hanoi Sunday, is a further blow to the group pushed by former U.S. President Barack Obama, which Trump exited from in 2017. RCEP will account for about 30% of the global economy, 30% of the global population, and reach 2.2 billion consumers. Amid questions over Washington's engagement in Asia, RCEP may cement China's position more firmly as an economic partner with Southeast Asia, Japan, and Korea, putting the world's second biggest economy in a better position to shape the region's trade rules. The United States is absent from both RCEP and the successor to the Obama-led Trans-Pacific Partnership, and that's leaving the world's biggest economy out of two trade groups that span the fastest-growing region on Earth. RCEP groups the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations, China, Japan, South Korea, Australia, and New Zealand. It aims in coming years to progressively lower tariffs across many areas. The deal is being signed on the sidelines of the online ASEAN summit held as Asian leaders address tensions in the South China Sea and tackle plans for a post-pandemic economic recovery in a region where the U.S.-China rivalry has been rising. Meanwhile, in the United States, Joe Biden, the projected winner of the U.S. presidential election, will inherit a pandemic-ravaged economy that shows signs of recovery. As Keith Kosinski reports, Biden's ambitious economic agenda will face hurdles in a politically divided Congress.
U.S. stock markets rose after Democrat Joe Biden was projected to have won the 2020 presidential contest. Financial analysts say investors will be reassured if Republicans retain their Senate majority.
The stock market loves divided government. Why? Things are predictable. Why? Because not a lot of things will change.
America's continued economic recovery is closely tied to progress in combating the pandemic. While COVID-19 cases have spiked, promising vaccine trial results have also been reported. Economists say getting back to pre-pandemic economic conditions will be a challenge for the Biden administration.
We're still in a deep economic hole. We have to recover about 10 million jobs to get back to where we were in February. And I think most expectations are that won't take place until 2022.
During the campaign, Biden proposed raising taxes on corporations and the wealthy to fund initiatives in healthcare, education, the environment, and infrastructure. Lockstep Republican opposition is all but assured to any tax hike.
That is not necessarily the best thing for the economy. However, what I believe will offset that will be plans for infrastructure, and infrastructure will get people back to work.
Under a Biden administration, the U.S. is expected to rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement. Biden has promised a clean energy revolution that would put the United States on a path to net zero carbon emissions by 2050.
If it is done immediately, I think we could see some specific issues in the economy because the oil industry impacts everything.
The U.S. should not be in a lagging position. We should be in a global leading position in terms of developing the technologies, investing the technologies, and transforming the economy.
Amid the pandemic gloom, some see a bright economic future.
The age of discovery is not yet over, so as technological advances continue, we're going to see parts of the economy grow and explode that we can't even anticipate right now.
Biden is likely to focus initially on economic stimulus and recovery measures. Before the pandemic, America enjoyed a decade-long economic expansion that saw wages rise and unemployment plunge to historic lows. Keith Kosinski for VOA News, New York.
There's much more on our top story and all the stories that you hear today on VOA Asia on our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, and we invite you to stop by our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you make a visit to voanews.com. Aung San Suu Kyi, NLD, wins second landslide election in Myanmar. National Security Advisor O'Brien to represent United States at Asia meetings. Pakistan claims irrefutable evidence of Indian links to terrorism on Pakistani soil. Pakistani-Indian military clashes kill 13 in Kashmir. In Malaysia, businesses adapt to survive COVID. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more. All you have to do is visit Facebook at VOA Asia and stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. U.S. President-elect Joe Biden is expected to energize Southeast Asian countries that spar with a more powerful China over the disputed South China Sea by siding with them without inviting armed conflict. Scholars say Biden can be expected to put more emphasis on diplomacy, rather than the sort of military moves favored by President Donald Trump, which have included naval ship passages through disputed waters and arms sales to China's regional rivals. Countries in the Association of Southeast Asian Nations should now expect a U.S. leader who will support them in working out a maritime code of conduct with China, says Alan Chong, associate professor at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies in Singapore. China and ASEAN have been striving for such a code aimed at preventing mishaps since 2002. China had stalled for years until reviving the idea in 2017.
They don't have to directly get involved and trigger Chinese sensitivities. They could just quietly support ASEAN in negotiating the code of conduct. Of course, ASEAN's game plan will always be aligned with Washington.
Washington sees many Southeast Asian countries as allies that could help contain China as needed. China cites historical records to back its claim to about 90% of the contested waterway. Other countries say China's claims overlap their maritime exclusion economic zones. China is tentatively optimistic, but Trump has challenged Chinese leaders on trade, technology, and consular issues, as well as maritime sovereignty. However, scholars say China's increased pressure on Vietnam, the Philippines, and Malaysia in the 3.5 million square kilometer South China Sea over the past 4 years will compel Biden to continue some of Trump's countermeasures, such as the U.S. Navy's Freedom of Navigation Operations, or FONOP. Yu Sun is East Asia Program Senior Associate at the Simpson Center Think Tank in Washington.
I actually see the escalation cycle in the South China Sea as a almost a predetermined reality that we will have to deal with, because U.S. cannot not do FONOP operations in the South China Sea, and the Chinese will react, which means that the friction points continue to exist between U.S. and China, regardless of who is president.
Eduardo Araral, associate professor at the National University of Singapore's Public Policy School, predicts Biden will try to keep up pressure on China, partly to show that his Democratic Party can be tough enough to deter Trump's Republicans from running a hawk against him in 2024.
They will probably move away simply from dialogue, because I think Americans already knew that dialogue will not give them an upper hand in relation to China. There's got to be some muscle in that dialogue.
We thank Ralph Jennings in Taipei for contributing this story. Happening now in Asia, more than a billion Indians celebrated Diwali amid twin concerns of a resurgence in coronavirus infections and rising air pollution. Fireworks are a major part of the celebrations. Many were set off despite bans. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us as we begin a brand new week together on VOA Asia. Thousands of protesters marched in Washington Saturday supporting President Donald Trump and his unproven claims of widespread vote fraud in the November 3rd election. Mike O'Sullivan reports that supporters of President-elect Biden also rallied, demanding an orderly transition of presidential power.
They converged on the nation's capital, getting a thumbs up from President Donald Trump, who drove by in his motorcade. Despite an absence of evidence, they say President-elect Joe Biden stole the election.
We hope that the nation will heal by listening to our voice so that we know that we will have a fair election. All the legitimate and fair votes and legal votes will be counted.
The far-right self-described Western chauvinists, Proud Boys, were among the protesters. So were groups billed as Women for America First, Million MAGA March, and Stop the Steal DC. There was name-calling as Biden supporters confronted the demonstrators and some skirmishes and arrests, but the march and a rally at the U.S. Supreme Court were mostly peaceful. Encouraged by President Trump, many protesters believe the election results were altered with fraudulent ballots or rigged voting machines.
And they can turn automatically the votes. This is why they had to recount one by one.
A close count in Georgia triggered an automatic recount, which is being done by hand.
If there's one vote that is fraudulent, that's enough for me. This isn't a research project. I'm not looking for statistically significant stuff. I'm looking for one evidence of voter fraud.
But that won't make a difference, say election experts. Most analysts say recounts and legal challenges in individual states are unlikely to change the result of the election.
We hope Trump wins, but if he doesn't, the world will go on.
These Trump supporters say it's not over yet, and Trump insists he has no plan to concede.
If President Trump concedes, then of course we're going to accept that too.
With or without a concession, President-elect Biden will take office on January 20th. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia, updates to the U.S. citizenship test will require applicants to answer more questions than before and could reduce the number of tests administered each day. The test now has 128 civics items to study from and will require applicants to answer 20 questions instead of 10. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, sniffer dogs are being used to identify people infected with the coronavirus, and early trials suggest they are incredibly accurate at detecting the disease. As Henry Ridgewell reports, this is raising hopes that our canine companions could soon be used to help fight the pandemic.
Kossi, E.T., and Mina, Finland's latest weapons in the fight against the coronavirus. The sniffer dogs are being put to work at Helsinki's Vantaa Airport, using their unrivaled sense of smell to detect any passengers carrying the disease. Early results are encouraging. The dog's detection rate closely matches that of swab or PCR tests.
We have done like 16, 17,000 PCR tests at the airport, and less than 1% are positive. If you compare these dogs, less than 1%, and these PCR tests, less than 1%, they are about the same. I don't think there's statistical difference.
In fact, researchers say the dogs are beating the swabs, detecting positive coronavirus cases that the tests have missed. Dogs have been used to detect other diseases. Professor James Logan had been working on a project using dogs to detect malaria when the coronavirus hit.
A dog's nose is absolutely astounding in terms of what it can detect. You know, we're talking about parts per trillion. So it's like, a teaspoon of sugar in two Olympic-sized swimming pools. It's that sort of equivalent.
Logan began looking at whether dogs could detect the coronavirus.
It's not the virus itself, but it's the change in our body that causes a change in our odor that the dogs can detect.
Trials are underway for using dogs for coronavirus detection in several countries, including the United States, Finland, Britain, and Lebanon. Final results for many of the trials are expected soon, and if successful, many more canine detectors could be deployed around the world.
Environments where you've got to get through a lot of people very, very quickly, these dogs could be working. So we're looking at places like airports, but also other ports of entry, perhaps commuter train stations, maybe even places of work and hospitals or schools.
So man's best friend could soon be helping to fight one of mankind's biggest challenges. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
Now on VOA Asia, Australian scientists are developing an ambitious plan to try to tame lightning to ease the threat of bushfires. Many of last summer's devastating blazes were caused by lightning strikes. An international team of researchers in Canberra is testing a laser beam to try to control where the lightning hits.
Scientists in Canberra are trying to tame the lightning bolts responsible for many Australian bushfires. The scientists believe the bolts' path and direction could be controlled by small portable laser pointers. Lightning is generated when frozen raindrops collide in a storm cloud, creating an electric charge. Researchers have shown that thunderclouds could be short-circuited by using a laser to heat tiny particles in the air to trigger a lightning strike. In the laboratory, they've successfully used an energy beam to guide a burst of electricity to a designated target. Professor Andre Moroshnichenko of the University of New South Wales in Canberra is a co-author of the study.
The reason for our research was to find the condition where we can control and induce lightning where we want it and when we want it. We anticipate that it should be quite effective and low cost.
Those trials are expected to start soon. The research has been published in the journal Nature Communications. It was a collaboration that involved the University of New South Wales in Canberra, Texas A&M University in Qatar, and the University of California in Los Angeles. The largest bushfire ever recorded in Australia was caused by lightning last October. The Gospers Mountain blaze burned for 79 days and scorched more than a million hectares near Sydney's suburban fringe. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Disaster response teams, police and soldiers continue to work in the Philippines since a typhoon made landfall in the capital city, Manila, last week. Residents of the island of Luzon withstood winds of 150 kilometers per hour as Typhoon Vamco passed through Wednesday, forcing more than 400,000 people to evacuate or seek higher ground. According to the Associated Press, more than 3.8 million households lost power in the capital, with tens of thousands of homes destroyed by flash flooding and floating debris. Vamco is the fifth storm to impact the Philippines in 3 weeks. The region is hit by roughly 20 tropical storms each year. Experts estimate that typhoons are becoming stronger, with climate change blamed for the more powerful tropical cyclones. As severe weather events increase in frequency and intensity in the United States and around the world, scientists and forecasters are seeking more effective weather mapping programs. VOA's Julie Tabo tells us more.
Severe weather events are occurring more often across the U.S. Better understanding of such extreme climate patterns is crucial for scientists and forecasters, a goal in which researchers at the University of Maryland are hoping to contribute. Working in collaboration with NOAA and NASA, The researchers are developing a weather mapping program using 3D virtual reality technology, an advancement on existing programs where data is currently displayed in a two-dimensional format.
Atmospheric data is 3D in nature. Clouds aren't 2D. Winds don't blow east to west. They blow up and down as well.
What we're doing with the virtual reality is bringing it in and displaying the data in its native three-dimensional context, and we're hoping that that'll lead to better interpretation of the data by people that are using it.
The project, which is funded by NOAA, is one of the few weather mapping programs that's exploring virtual reality, and it's coming just in time.
If you can use our sensing technology with our knowledge of science to get actionable information to the folks that can act on it, you can potentially stop these forest fires before they grow into much more impactful events.
While the program is still in the early stages of development, the experts are clearly excited about its long-term potential.
I think a system like this will make forecasting much easier for meteorologists and will lead to quicker and better decision making in the event of maybe a natural disaster or an extreme weather event, and possibly help save lives.
Julie Tabo, VOA News.
Comedy can bring many things: laughter, tears, and even relief. Paul Kim is an Asian American stand-up comedian. Born in Burbank, California, he describes comedy and laughter in his own words.
Laughter is so important. Laughter is medicine. Laughter is the shortest distance between two people. One of the best gifts we've ever been given. I've been doing stand-up for 15 years, so I've seen all different kinds of laughers. There's the inside laugher. They don't make any noise. They're always just like insecure, touchy laughers. They always need reassurance. They always, did you see that? Like, yeah, I heard that. We're at the same show. Oh, the snorter, my favorite, you know. It's like such a compliment when you get a snort, except you feel bad for their spouse. You're like, dang, they're like every morning, honey. I'm like, oh my God. I was born and raised in Burbank, California, right here over the mountain. And I'm the last of five kids, two older brothers, two older sisters. They're all 2 years apart, and I'm the fifth. I'm 10 years apart, so I'm an accident. Pretty obvious, you know. So when I was a kid, I asked my dad, you know, Appa, am I an accident? And he said, there are no accidents in God's kingdom, only regret. My dad was the pastor of a huge church, so being a preacher's kid, you're not allowed to listen to the radio, watch, you know, certain kinds of TV. So the first time my friend let me listen to Eddie Murphy, Delirious, on tape, and he's cursing and he's just making everybody laugh, I was like, wait, what is this? Preachers always said what you're supposed to say. You have to stick to the guidelines. But comedians always said what people were thinking but were afraid to say. A lot of times I was the only Asian amongst a lot of white kids. I was really skinny. They call me chopsticks, Indiana bones, chicken legs.
You know, like I was the skinniest kid. Like you could tie a string around me and I just fly away like a kite. I was so skinny. I was bullied.
Always made to feel inferior. Even though they weren't doing it on purpose, that's how I started doing comedy, because I could take away the power of that, make them making fun of me by being funny. I have kids. My last name's Kim. I really wanted my son to be a leader, so I was going to name him Martin Luther Kim. My second choice was Abraham Lin Kim, but we didn't want to put pressure, so we named him Lion. He's the Lion Kim. And you know, when you do talk about your ethnicity a lot of comedians, a lot of comments, they're like, see, it's all they do, they talk about, you know, but it's just because a lot of them, they don't understand what it's like to be the only one of a different color in the room. They've never felt that. When I walk onto the stage, I used to get butterflies, but I've performed for so long now, I don't feel that anymore. But it's the best rush, and by far, making people laugh and helping them forget about their problems is the best drug.
American comedian Paul Kim. Amid all of the heavy world news we hear each and every day, we hope you have a little bit of laughter and fun in your day. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We thank you for joining us on this program and any of the platforms you decide to visit. We also like to thank our team that brings you our program each and every day: Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.